President Obama recently announced a proposal for the world's largest marine preserve in the Pacific Ocean in the area between Hawaii and American Samoa.
The effort's intended to protect those waters from fishing, drilling, and other actions that could harm the marine ecosystem. The move comes as the Global Ocean Commission released a report calling the world's oceans a, quote, degraded, underproductive, and exploited system.
Phil Dustin joins us now. He's a professor of biology at the College of Charleston. He's a marine ecologist who specializes in coral reefs. Phil, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm talking to you from here in Wisconsin. You're near the ocean in South Carolina. What do you want people to know who might not think about their ocean in their daily lives, about how the oceans are doing today?
You know, I think the first thing we have to realize is we owe life on Earth to oceans. Without oceans, we wouldn't have life that we have on Earth at all. And the oceans really then are central to our well-being on this planet. You know, our blood is almost like seawater. Life came from the sea, and now we sort of look at the sea as something that we can just utilize when, in fact, we're really part of it.
President Obama just announced plans for what would be the world's largest marine preserve in the Pacific Ocean. What do you make of that idea?
I think it's about time. As a matter of fact, it's past time. The oceans are amazing. If you took everything that we have put in the oceans and piled it up on land, the Earth would be uninhabitable. And just think about that for a minute. Think of all the various kinds of wastes and dumps and everything we put in the ocean. And still the ocean is resilient. And what we found is when you leave the ocean alone, it can rebound. And so having marine protected areas, very large ones, especially out in the open sea as well as near shore, very, very important. So I think it's a very significant thing he's doing.
Well, it's an interesting thing. Here in the United States, we have national parks, we have state parks. Why aren't there more marine preserves globally?
Well, you know, again, it goes back to we protect what we own and we protect what we think is of value. And we do have this idea of an exclusive economic zone around countries, and we use that to protect our marine resources. But there is no real governance of the ocean. And it goes back to trying to have international conventional law of the sea probably 20, 30 years ago. I think we began that, or maybe a little earlier. Trying to get some sort of agreement of nations to have some sort of governance in the ocean. And really, right now, it's just a free-for-all.
Meaning people can just plunder what they wish and not worry about the consequences.
That's right. Once you get out into the open ocean, nobody owns it. So you can go out there and do whatever you want. And we do have some issues if you want to go out and blow up nuclear bombs or dump hazardous waste in the ocean. But for the most part, we don't really have some sort of governance to protect the ocean.
That's pretty remarkable when you consider how much of the planet Earth is comprised of oceans.
Not only that, Veronica, but when you think of what the oceans are worth to us, two-thirds of the planet's surface is water. And then there was a valuation of the Earth's goods and services. You know, these are the things that ecosystems provide for free to us, things like fresh air and oxygen to breathe and processing carbon dioxide and generating food. And the value of the Earth's resources, goods and services, in 1997 dollars was about $33 trillion, more than all the economies of all the world's nations at the time. And the oceans made up 67% of that.
Wow.
So $20.9 trillion. And they do that for free. So we really ought to start valuing that and realizing how precious it is rather than just seeing it as something we can exploit.
Well, there is this new report from the Global Ocean Commission that says that the oceans are, and this is a quote, they're degraded and underproductive as an ecosystem. Do you agree with that assessment?
Yes, I do. I really do, especially the parts of the ocean that I have intimate contact with. And those mostly are coral reefs. But and if you use those reefs as, sort of look at them as the most productive parts of the ocean and the places where the greatest different kinds of life exist, you know, the highest biodiversity, those are the places that are changing the most. And so we're seeing them as sort of like the canary in a cage that the miner would take into the coal mine as an indicator of the health of the ocean. And we see degradation occurring all around the world at astonishing rates. And every fishery in the world's oceans pretty much is overfished. We have more and more people placing a greater demand on the sea. And it's gotten to the point where we have to take an active role in trying to ensure the health of the oceans.
You're talking about coral reefs, and it's an area that you specialize in. And we sometimes, as you say, we look at them as a barometer of an ocean's health. They're supposed to be incredibly beautiful. I've never seen one. Can you describe for us what a healthy coral reef looks like?
Oh, yeah. Have you walked in a forest?
Oh, yeah.
You know, when you walk in a forest, the structure of the forest is generated by plants, mostly large trees and small bushes. And then you have all these beautiful flowers in the understory, ferns, and all of the various small plants that fill in the forest. Well, when you go swimming on a coral reef, you're effectively swimming over the canopy of one of the most beautiful underwater forests you could ever imagine. And the corals are usually brown and white and different colors, and they build the structure. And they're essentially living rocks. They're very thin, fragile calcium carbonate skeletons they build, and their tissues on the outside of them. So you have this like swimming through a beautiful flower garden. And then there are all kinds of fabulous swarms of insects that are really fish. You know, you have all these different colors of fish, and in some places the fish live in the corals, like different birds and insects live in different kinds of trees. They are absolutely, you know, a profusion of life. As one of my mentors, Captain Cousteau, would say. He'd say there's this exuberance of life on a coral reef that you can't replace.
So you're talking about Jacques Cousteau, right?
Yeah, Jacques Cousteau.
What was it like working with him?
Oh, it was wonderful. It was wonderful because he allowed everybody to use their talents to create something. And we would go off underwater and he would have a camera and I would be the marine biologist and we'd go explore the reef and find interesting things to photograph. And it really, his shows weren't really done with a script in mind. It was done with the idea, let's go out and see what's here. And then let's show the people that don't scuba dive what it's like.
Well, one of the things he did was he helped people fall in love with the oceans because he introduced them to the oceans, to places that they had never seen, you know, the deep sea before, and the creatures that live there. Do you think that as a country, as a world, that we're still in love with the oceans, or have we lost the thread of that?
You know, more important than our love of the oceans, Captain Cousteau showed us that the oceans are alive. Before his work, we always thought of the oceans as just this big puddle of water that we get fish from and we can extract things from. And so he taught us more about cherishing the oceans and that they're alive, like you said, the love. My whole generation of marine biologists fell in love with the ocean because of his shows. And now we've sort of walked away from that a little bit. We've sort of regenerated our economy and we're looking at exploitation, and more people go out and want to extract fish and minerals and oil. And so we've walked away a little bit, I think, from that feeling that we all had. And we've done that in many aspects of the biosphere because we feel that money is more important than nature. And one of the magical things is if somebody were to give you the goods and services of the earth, if they said, here's $33 trillion, and you got the best scientists and the best engineers in the world, and you said, here's $33 trillion, build me a biosphere, we couldn't begin to do it. We could not. So the idea is the long term has no price. It doesn't matter how much we think it's worth. What we really need to do is keep it functioning so we can live here.
We're talking right now about the health of the oceans right now. In light of news that President Obama wants to create the world's biggest marine reserve in the Pacific Ocean, Phil Dustin stays with us. He's a biology professor at the College of Charleston.
And we'd like to hear from you on this. What concerns do you have about the health of the oceans? Do you have questions about what threats there are to oceans, about life in the oceans, and what can be done to help them? Are you curious about the fishing industry or how ocean health might affect us here in Wisconsin? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're talking about the health of the oceans right now in light of news that President Obama wants to create the world's biggest marine reserve in the Pacific Ocean.
There's also a new report out from the Global Ocean Commission deploring the state of the world's oceans, offering up a plan to address overfishing, pollution, and other issues. We've got Phil Dustin with us. He's a biology professor at the College of Charleston, specializing in coral reefs. And we can hear from you on this at 800-642-1234. Your thoughts, your questions about the state of the world's oceans. 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we go to our callers now. Steve is with us from Racine. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I'd like to ask about the Fukushima radiation in the Pacific.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a specific question or just in general?
Well, it's something that, I mean, I have a friend who just came back from Hawaii where he said the cab driver was wearing a Geiger counter, and there's concerns about the fish in the Pacific, and you know that the wildlife. You know, I don't. You look on the web, and you don't know what to believe, if it's what's true or what's how dangerous it is. Or
okay, gotcha, Steve. Thank you for that question. And Phil, can you comment on that?
So some of the large predatory fish have been found to have some radioactive contamination in them. And these are fish that have global ranges. So we have this system in Fukushima that is leaching radioactive, pretty highly toxic radioactive material into the ocean consistently. And from what I can see, it's just flowing into the ocean. And so there's a source. And that source is picked up in the food chain and transfers up into higher levels of the food chain. And I have friends in Hawaii, too, that are marine biologists, and they are talking about not eating any fish out of the Pacific Ocean.
Mm.
So on an interesting side, though, it may actually start to protect some of the large fish that people hunt for prizes, like some of the very large tuna that people think is great for sashimi. If it's radioactive, I don't think people would really think it's so good to eat anymore. So maybe in a strange kind of twisted way, it becomes a conservation tool. You know, if you look what happened around Chernobyl, nature's moved in pretty well. It's moved into that space, and the wolves are back, and there may be some radioactive fallout problems with respect to that, too, and mutations. We don't know about that. But, the whole idea of radioactive nuclear power plants built on faults that can be inundated by tsunamis, to me, is sort of just the epitome of our hubris when we think we can go out and conquer nature.
Hmm. Well, thank you so much for that question, Steve, yeah. And an interesting answer, too. We'll go next to Patricia in Madison. Hi, Patricia.
Hi. I write a living wildlife column for the Cap Times, and I just did some research on the biosphere and what's happening. And from what I understand, and I'm not sure if the distinction is large mammals or all large fish, that 90% of the top of the food chain in the oceans has been declined, 90% in the last 50 years or so. And also, I also read Jacques Cousteau's last postmortem published book, and he said that the continental shelf, the areas off the coast of our continents, that narrow band around them is where most of the nurseries of life of the ocean are produced, and that's exactly where we drill. So
okay.
I would like answers to the 90% question. Is that like whales and mammals, or is that just big fish?
Right. Let's get Phil Dustin in on this. Phil, what about that 90% figure?
So large fish disappearing, large animals disappearing, I don't think you could say it's 89% or 95%, but it's a very, very large number. I once read an essay called We're Killing the Elders. We tend to go out and kill the biggest fish. We chop down the biggest trees. There's this fascination. We want to somehow go out and collect the biggest things. But you're right, very large animals, especially sharks. And for years, we hunted the whales almost to extinction, and some countries still do hunt these large animals. These large animals play a very important role in the ecology of the sea, much the way lions do and wolves do in keeping the stocks healthy. We have the same problem in the ocean, but we tend to go out and hunt that. And we have the technology to hunt most of those large animals. at least sport fishing now, there's a lot of tag and release, and that's a lot better than just catch and kill. So that's one aspect of it. The other aspect is all these animals that live at the top of the food chain are contaminated with all kinds of our chemicals that we've produced in the last 100 years. As far as the continental shelves having the mystery, that's where most of the productivity is, because light penetrates and drives the photosynthetic rate on the bottom. Most of the mysteries in the ocean are probably yet to be discovered. And there are fabulous mysteries in deep water and fabulous mysteries in shallow water. And I mean, the shallow water ecosystems that I study are probably some of the most glamorous and mysterious of all. Because remember, we know probably more about the surface of the moon than we do about the bottom of the ocean.
And we have to leave it there. We're out of time. But Phil, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me.
We've been talking with Phil Dustin, a biology professor at the College of Charleston. He's a marine ecologist who specializes in coral reefs.